The Bill Gibb Line is sponsored by Finney's the Jeweller. An independent family-owned business established in 1957, Finney's continues to serve Aberdeen from its George Street location. The Bill Gibb Line, a spoken word podcast celebrating the life and work of fashion designer Bill Gibb. Written and performed by Shane Strachan. Episode 2, My Creative Zenith. Although I am regarded as a fantasy designer, I envisage a style of woman when I design. Sometimes I am criticised for being theatrical, but I am motivated by emotion. I just know what I like. I enjoy my clothes, enjoy creating them and seeing them worn well. I design with a discriminating woman in mind, probably a career woman with great style and confidence, a woman on the move and in the know, with a vibrant personality to carry the clothes off. If I see them worn badly, I feel a deep and strange pain. It is something that stems from a deep sense of self-awareness, knowing who you are, what your looks can do and what they can't, plus a certain aestheticism, an enjoyment of beauty and quality, not just in clothes, but in decor, food and gardens. Both the designer and the woman who will wear his clothes must have it. It is inborn, and those lucky enough to be born with some should develop and pursue it. But if it's not there, no amount of expensive clothes or accessories can replace it. In fact, it is an aura that permeates everything in a woman's environment. My most successful clothes might not be what a woman would walk around in every day, but they feel transported in them. Oh, once, I got an amazing letter from an American woman saying how much she liked a dress. She said, "Honey, I went to the theater in it, and the play was great. I went on to a restaurant in it, and the food was great. And then I even got laid in it, and that was great too." The Old Hall, Lincoln's Inn, 12th of April, 1973. Bewigged barristers pass by outside the austere setting of Lincoln's Inn, London, as Bill Gibb unveiled a breathtaking collection. Under the dour painted eyes of bygone judges, who left the fashion jury to question, what exactly is the gift of the Gibb? From the stylized symmetry of Schiaparelli-styled hats, to marbled leather gloves and corresponding court shoes, it's his temerity to test the arithmetics of design and boldly redefine his own fantasy look. It's his ability to come to grips with the body through disciplined sculpting and decisive cuts, evidenced by superb jersey dresses in pale grey with expertly crocheted cinnamon belts. It's the knitwear's quirky blend of unexpected hues, mixing Mexican red, muted grey and shark blue, and the humour of a signature bee-themed motif, buzzing through buttons and embroidery. The icing on the cake? His frothy net confections in Neapolitan colours and crinoline shapes, perfect for a Gone with the Wind extravaganza, starring Shirley Temple as Scarlett O'Hara. Greeted with escalating enthusiasm by big store buyers and fashion press, this brilliant collection justifies, for once, the use of superlatives for each and every dress. It was unanimously judged a 5-star smash hit success. One of my ambitions is to dress a film, preferably a period film. My ideal star would be Twiggy. Twiggy and I have grown up together in fashion. She's been a very good source of pleasure. She is so beautiful, and my clothes seem to look so good on her. She virtually helped start me off. She was wearing my clothes at the height of her modelling career, and she gave me a big boost when no one had heard of me. When Liz Taylor is here, I get a phone call to come round to the Dorchester. "Come for brunch," is usually the command, so round I go, and there is nothing formal with Elizabeth. She throws her arms wide and says, "Gee, Bill, how are you?" And she hugs you and she swings you around. Then she wants to see what I brought for her. She'll look at one and say, "No, that's for skinny women. What else have you got?"
And that's how it goes. You still have your group of film stars and socialites who continue to buy expensive evening dresses, and to that section one can now add the rich Arab population. It always seems very strange to me that these people will willingly pay hundreds for an evening dress, which will be worn only once, and quibble about paying £70 or £80 for a day dress, which will be worn hard. Very funny. Kinsman Morrison Art Gallery, Maddox Street, 30th of April, 1974. Congratulations, bova-booted Bill Gibb, for filling an art gallery full of too many people, including two Beatles wives and Bianca Jagger, and keeping them happy for over an hour. A leg encased in a striped sock and a boot now stamps his posters, invitations, and the opening of the show. To follow, Brenda Arnault set the mood for this collection, by miming to step in the right direction, while covered up in this season's look. A polo sweater and kimono sleeve jacket, in lavender, turquoise, black and bordeaux. A knitted tapestry effect by Kay Fassett. All echoed in a skirt and Otterburn tweed, with even the shoes continuing the theme. The Don Quixote of the layered look, then piled up sweaters and Dr. Zhivago furs, and cardigans and burgundy and aubergine, before revealing grand evening dresses in smoke-grey chiana and the softest of velvets. To finish, he allied his vast crinoline dress of two seasons past with his Ned Mantillas of last and a Miss Havisham look that made Mrs. Jagger gasp. A triumph over commonplace present-day gloom. There was no room to stamp above a boot. Otherwise, Gibb's final ovation would have surely boomed. People wear my clothes on grand occasions. We hear of customers wanting one for a grand ball in Paris. When I look at the French collections, I'm struck by the similarities. Then you find that an assistant in one fashion house is having an affair in another. There may be some infiltration of ideas among designers, but I think it is much more of a sixth sense that is at work. I have my own guiding laws based on the history of what sells. Then I just design and hope that there will be a following for it. But there is no guarantee. You're as good as your last collection, or at best, you will get the benefit of the doubt for a couple of seasons. The fashion world is tough, not so much because of the bitchiness among the people, but because of the organisation needed to get it all together, the fur, suede and so on. I'm really quite friendly with other designers, and although I don't see Hartnell and Amy's, that's more due to the age difference. The Parisians are much more professional than the British. Dior absolutely revolutionised fashion, and that was very important at that time, but our attitude has changed since then, and the new liberalism is reflected in our clothes.
Covent Garden, 30th of April, 1975. Sun, sparkle and sleek chic. At Covent Garden's airy floral hall, Gibb's Autumn Collection had them all. This season's signature is the tulip, lavishly embroidered in crystal beads on an apricot chiana dress with classic swaggy draping. His printed wool's charmed. Their flower patterns neatly set in squares, their texture airy and light, shally weave. This was cheering indeed to those who found Paris' take on autumn too grey and bleak. Sun yellow for autumn evenings looked fresh, the crystal embroidery was delicate, and Yakut knits had hints of gold lurex. The lean shapes were easy to move in, and coachman-style coats were the handsomest seen in London this spring. Tucking is his current passion. Always vertical. Skirts have it, so do jacket bags. And it makes exciting yokes on the dashing cavalier coats.
Success was Bill's in great measure, with applause punctuating the showing of every garment. There's nothing young or kooky here. This is couture, as mature as it comes.
I told my mom that if I didn't make it by 30, not a day or a week later, but by my 30th birthday, I would be back to drive my dad's tractor on the farm. Making it by 30 and keeping to my word was so important. I suppose I knew I could forget about that tractor when Vogue voted me Designer of the Year, 1970. I was only 27 then, so if it all went wrong, I still had 3 years to make good. I just cannot stand still. I look back on my collections over the past few years and sometimes I say, "Hey, Billy, that wasn't too bad at all," but most of the time I think, "Why didn't I improve it that way or this?" I'm basically a terrible pessimist and I find it very difficult to believe all those flattering things people say about me. So I go from one collection to the next wanting to get better and better. I used to think I did it for my family, but I proved myself to them quite some time ago. I always felt I could be a good designer. It was something inside me and I couldn't refuse it, but there was a driving force and things would happen in spite of myself. My worst moments are after a collection. There I am, surrounded by lovely reviews, orders flowing in and kind people saying nice things, and I feel utterly unimportant and desolate. All my energy has gone into one show and suddenly I think, it's all over. I am not needed anymore. When I get my downs, they are colossal downs. But before a collection, there are equally big ups, so when I feel the depression coming on bad, I take myself off on holiday. And that's when you see your real self stripped of everything. I can't go for more than 2 weeks at a time or I know I would throw myself off a rock. Apart from travel, I don't go mad and buy myself mink-lined drawers. Sometimes I think, right, I'm going to be a millionaire. But then I realise it's just not important to me. I haven't reached my creative zenith of asceticism. And maybe I never will. The Dutch House, St. Catherine's Way, 10th of April, 1976. Behold the museum pieces of the future. Sure to be ranked up there with medieval church vestments, Marie Antoinette's petticoats, and Fortuny's pleated silks. Presenting Exhibit A, in mixtures of black, red, and gold, an Angora tabard sweater with cowl collar, worn with gossamer fine silk printed pants, and the same sari fabric wrapped all over, like a Byzantine emperor's toga. The story continues in knitted jibas, culottes, leggings and balaclavas, soft burgundy leathers with golden prints, and a series of patchwork suedes, the favourite, a gaucho in cape outfit, in cobalt blue, trimmed with black. Don't forget to view the fun fairs produced by Philip Hockley, silver cream and red fox, an exotic wolf cape coat with embroidered yoke, and a snappy jacketed skunk. From head to toe, a floaty dress of coral chiffon is gold embroidered and pleated like a richly tooled copy of the Quran, a look to rival Saint Laurent. Another dress with enormous bat sleeves is pleated and smothered in cobweb lamis that shimmer like a thousand dragonflies. With the precision of a Middle Eastern mosaic, this explosion of sheer fantasy power may be our greatest designer's finest hour.
Half the success of clothes is teamwork. Nobody's a one-man band. I have a wonderful team around me. There's Kate Franklin, a lovely lady, and Brian Morrison, who's a great entrepreneur. Both are partners with me. And there's my Italian pattern cutter who has been with me for years, and the splendid girls you just met. Really, we are all a very nice family, all 25 or so of us. I treat them all like long-lost brothers and sisters. Sometimes I feel guilty about my success and think, I'm not that spectacular. Why me? There are so many talented people around who deserve a break. Basically, I have been very lucky. Bruton Place, Mayfair, 28th of October, 1976.
In the fashion world, Gib has gone oriental, with striped kimono starkly framed in the finest black satin and Indian silk. For the 20 bride, there's a daring wedding dress, reminiscent of Victorian underwear and white broderie anglais. Granny won't like it, but those old underpinnings of a yesteryear have been freed from the boudoir as tomorrow's out of gear. This year's collection seems intent on promoting sensuality. The necklines have been lowered and the sides of skirts are split. And when the skirts whirl and slit to reveal the voile and lace underneath, you get a delicious peep at the world's dearest panties. We live in tough times with our country tottering towards bankruptcy. But our clothes won't stop being the ritziest in Europe.
You have been listening to episode 2 of The Bill Gibb Line, a limited series celebrating the life and work of fashion designer Bill Gibb, written and performed by Shane Strachan with music by Ross White. This podcast was recorded at Rock Villa, the National Theatre of Scotland's headquarters in Glasgow, Scotland. With thanks to Bill Gibb's family, the Scottish Book Trust's Robert Louis Stevenson Fellowship, Look Again Aberdeen, Aberdeen Art Gallery, Fraserburgh Heritage Centre, and Central St Martin's Collection and Archives. The poems performed in this episode were inspired by the following source texts. Gift of the Gib, written by Michael Roberts for the Sunday Times on the 22nd of April, 1973. Londoner's Diary, A Lot of Bother, written anonymously for the Evening Standard on the 1st of May, 1974. Michael Roberts' Look column for the Sunday Times on the 1st of May, 1974. Tiptoeing Delightedly Through the Tulips with Bill Gibb, written by Serena Sinclair for the Daily Telegraph on the 3rd of May 1975. The Art of Making History in Fashion, written by Elena Matopoulos for the Daily Express on the 12th of April 1976. On the British Fashion Front, written by Elizabeth Morris for the Scotsman on 17th of April 1976. Oriental Touch from Northeast Designer, written anonymously for the Press and Journal on the 29th of October, 1976. Keep up to date and find out more at shanestrachan.com.
The Bill Gibb Line is sponsored by Finney's the Jeweller. An independent family-owned business established in 1957, Finney's continues to serve Aberdeen from its George Street location.